Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, for the worst 90 minutes in sports podcasting. That's right, it's the Two Guys Soccer Show. Daylight Savings Edition. The first wake up after the changing the clock forward is always the absolute worst. I am Mike. I am joined, as always, by my ever-present co-host. Hey, Stead, are you there?
I'm right here, brother.
All right, good to talk to you. And we've got the unofficial third member of the Two Guys Soccer Show, Coach G. Coach G, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, Mike. I just want to say, with my voice compared to over a text message, happy birthday, sir. Hopefully you had a great vacation and great 40th.
Yes, yes, that's right. I was celebrating my 40th with a lovely cruise to Key West and Nassau. I got your coronavirus right here on that one. Anyway, we are brought to you, as always, by the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. So, this weekend has been the weekend or the story of games that were played and games that were not. And I think I want to talk by... start off tonight by talking about games that are not being played. Most especially the announcement just a few hours ago, basically that Italy has shut down in order to contain the coronavirus plague. Many of the games in Serie A had been played behind closed doors up to this point or postponed. They are officially being postponed until at least April 3rd. What do you guys think of this move, Stead?
I was actually relatively shocked. I was expecting the games to be played behind closed doors as they had been over the past weekend. I thought that because of their Champions League obligations and the number of teams that are still alive in the Europa League competition, and European competitions in general, that this wouldn't necessarily come to this particular level of shutdown. But, I mean, I applaud the Italian FA and the Italian government for taking this very seriously and saying, look, the safety of our citizens is of the utmost importance, and we will sacrifice our number one sport and all the revenue that is associated with that number one sport out of whether or not you agree with the severity of the situation or not. It's still something that took an extraordinary amount of courage. So whether I agree with it or not, I mean, I was kind of like, it doesn't really matter because you got to respect their decision, and you have to understand that this is, out of all the countries kind of like in the Western world, which we currently live in, it's hitting Italy the hardest. So best of luck to the Italian citizens. But, I mean, the whole country's on lockdown now. So, mm-hmm. You know, hopefully this will pass and they can get back on track. But, you know, we'll see how this affects Champions League. We'll see how this affects Europa League, but, you know, I'm just going to sit back and wait and see and just kind of be like, look, if you need me to watch a couple of games to help you guys get back on track, let me know.
It's going to be interesting because all the so everything's shuttered indefinitely. But there are some big ones. Juventus still left in the Champions League. Inter Milan and Roma both in the
Europa League.
Europa League. And would be playing home matches during this time. Napoli would be on the road, I believe, against visiting Barcelona. Are these games even going to go on? And how are those teams going to be affected should they not be able to play? What is, you know, Juve has gone all in on the Champions League. It would be a shame for them to be eliminated because they couldn't play the games. What do you think, Coach J?
Yeah, my first thought is all the millions, if not billions of dollars that all these teams will lose collectively over this time. However, they're still going to play the games. You know, they're just taking a month off, which could be a good thing for some teams, healing some players that will compete, you know, the next month or month or two in their own divisions and their own conferences. However, my next thought would be, well, that pushes it back into the World Cup. Now, how often are these guys going to be playing in the World Cup? How fresh are they going to be for next season, so forth and so on? So we really don't know the ripple effect of this entire thing, kind of what's going on. But you definitely got to applaud that entire country is shutting down all the athletic and entertainment events just to, you know, kind of stop all this. You know, it sucks for those teams that have a good flow going on right now. They're winning. They're getting their 3 points left and right. And now this is going to stop it. And I know it's slowly leaking into other other countries like Spain. They're next. Germany is definitely on the watch right now. France is about to shut down everything. And now even England's talking. So maybe Italy is the first country to really set the precedent of what to do and kind of put everything back a whole month. But then again, future, what is going to go on with future games and how many you know, weeks or months do players will have off just to rest their bodies going 50, 60 games in a whole year? Now you're at World Cups, you have international play and whatnot. So you got to applaud the Italians, but, you know, the big overall effect, God only knows what's going to happen right now. So either we're all going to catch the flu and none of us catch the flu. So get your flu shots right now if you can, people. But bottom line is just wash your hands. You'll be fine.
So they had said that all the Serie A matches, Liga on, it looks like it's going to limit attendance to 1,000 fans. That should be interesting. Who decides who gets in and who doesn't? You're right. I agree with the idea of how do we prevent this from going all the way back into the Euros. You know, certain games, friendlies, are already going to have to be called off. Remember, Italy is supposed to play in the Euros. Is the Euros even going to be able to go on as scheduled this summer, or are we going to have to cancel that too if this does not get any better? They're already struggling to figure out how to replay the Ireland-Italy game for the Six Nations, which if Ireland is to win and to pick up their bonus point, they'll be in a pretty good position to win the whole entire – in fact, they'll be in lead of that whole entire tournament. But if they're not able to play it, I don't think they even get the points, which would be a problem. This really does have a knock-on effect. What do you think, Stead?
Yeah, the wave of this could actually be pretty profound. You know, normally when I come up with my whatever analysis, I weigh it against something that I've seen occur previously that I can kind of weigh on. And as Coach said, you know, this is Italy is kind of setting a precedent here, but I can't recall seeing something to this magnitude before. I mean, just beyond the talk of how they're, you know, potentially canceling the Olympics, even though that seems to be no longer the case, because it seems like where in the Far East, things seem to be coming under control. I mean, my father lives in Japan right now and was telling me the procedures that they have in place there now, and they're pretty strict, but they're also kind of on. I feel like they're kind of on the other side of this. Yeah, I'm rarely stumped, but this situation, I am stumped, and I can say that I can't say I'm going to be particularly surprised by any decision that they make. I would hope that this wouldn't push the Euros off too long, but you see, one thing that we have seen is that what they're talking about the next World Cup taking place in the fall, you could potentially see the Euros taking place a little bit later in the year, and having that then turn into a later start to the season, which could also come into play where you could see kind of a shift in the calendar, and that could directly go, you know, because, you know, in a year and a half, 2 years' time, we're going to be sitting here talking about the World Cup. So So that's kind of where I'm standing
about all
now.
The other smaller
I'm also
cups
like,
too.
I'm kind of holding my breath on this. I really don't know.
Coach Jay.
But if they push everything back into the regular season, but then you have to push back the FA Cup, you know, all the other small cups they have in all these other seasons and whatnot. All these countries have their all four or five different tournaments, so you have to push everything back. It's going to be a huge ripple effect. You know, and bottom line, some of these players that actually kind of depend on their actual soccer money because they don't have advertisement money, if they're not playing the games, are they making their money? You know, so is it going to hit their livelihood and people that have, you know, billion-dollar houses, can they actually afford that anymore if they're not playing, you know? So there's a huge effect that we really don't know. And my first thought being a history teacher is, oh, crap, here comes the plague again. But we never really saw this in our lifetime where countries are shutting down their events like this. You know, I've never seen anything like this. So to say what's going to happen in the future, I have no idea. But we can obviously kind of tell that, you know, being somewhat smart, that if they're going to be shutting down, there's going to be huge ramifications for this. And the bottom line, it's always going to be about money.
I'll tell you this, though. The conspiracy theorist in me thinks that this is just another way for them to talk about how the domestic leagues are not quite as important anymore and to get this European league kicked off the ground. That's the conspiracy theorist in me that's saying that they're going to use this as a ploy to lead to that. But, of course, conspiracy theories are often set in very vast and unattainable universes where we have lots of guys who wear tinfoil on their heads, so I could be completely off base here. But
you see, that a conspiracy is that this was a ploy to help eliminate Juventus by the Chinese investors in one of the foreign clubs.
Ah, there we go.
The fact that this might be used in some way, shape, or form as an argument for a European league is not a conspiracy theory. That's probably, like, fact. It's going to happen. We've been saying, or at least I've been saying for quite a while, that I do believe that the time of the European Super League is closer than we might think, closer than it is further away. This could be one of those issues or one of those things where you see the season get backed up, like you said, and teams are going to be forced to be playing, you know, every weekend and midweek throughout the course of the year to try and stay. So injuries and stuff like that. And the owners could have a look at that easily and say, you know, why are we playing these meaningless midweek games against lower division sides in cup matches when we could be making millions. I saw somewhere that to answer something that G brought up earlier, that shuttering the Serie A games, playing them behind closed doors, is going to end up costing them something like $324 million over the next couple of weeks.
That's crazy.
All right. So I don't believe that that's necessarily a conspiracy thing. I just think that that could be, like, that's caused. That certainly will lead to further discussions about the need for a European Super League.
Mm-hmm.
But was that you, G, who was about to jump in?
Yeah, you know, a thought just crossed my mind, too. And even as a player, you know, the fans either will, you know, kind of get you jacked up or give you motivation and blah, blah, blah. And now you're hearing everything from every single player now on the field, and it's going to change up the games. So a game where you might win 1-0, 2-1 with, you know, with the help of your 12th man, you might lose a game now, or you might tie a game. So this is definitely going to be different, even just for the tables for a lot of these leagues too, of, you know, people who's rising up or people kind of dropping in the league and stuff like that. It'll be kind of weird as a player, but again, is the show must go on right now, or is it, you know, the best of the actual country? And again, it is just sports. You know, we can come in and leave those kind of things, but definitely that brings all the cities together and brings countries together, you know, sports. So it's got to be even weird for the actual athletes themselves during this time period of, are we playing, are we not playing, you know, are we going to be practicing hard next couple of days? So the uncertainty is crossed, you know, definitely different levels and stuff like that. So it would be kind of weird just to play behind closed doors and don't hear any, you know, any fans chanting anything. So it's got to be weird.
So let's move on a little bit and talk about games that happened Liverpool close to within two goals or two wins, 6 points of winning the Premier League. It's not even April yet. They could conceivably have the Premier League locked up before April starts, a full month before the end of the season. Is that number of dead rubber games for them a bad thing if they're hoping to stay primed for Champions League contention? We saw them go out of the FA Cup, so the end, the first, they lose the unbeaten streak, so the Invincibles can breathe happy. Now the dreams of the treble are over. Man United can breathe happily. They got back to winning ways and are now the title holders elect. Is this going to be a bad thing for them? Is this going to be a bad thing for the Premier League? What do you think, Coach Jay?
Well, I think they won a couple months ago, to be honest. I'm surprised they don't have the trophy in their hands. Like, when they're up, like, 27 points, in my books, yeah, you know, throw the white flag. So, really, they're just waiting for to do time to get that actual trophy in their hands. And, yeah, they're worried about the Champions League, and, you know, they don't really have a super hard game against Atletico. Atletico will give them a challenge a little bit. You know, I think that Liverpool will eventually win that game. So their focus is definitely that tournament and doing the best that they can and trying to keep all the injuries down as low as possible. And Bournemouth was not a bad team. They always give you 100%. So for them to come back after being down 1-0, I think Liverpool just finally just kind of had it, you know, the last couple of weeks of just, you know, going at 100 miles per hour for as long as they did, that lose two games in a row. I think now they got maybe had their focus back and everything. So I expect good things to happen the next week or two with Liverpool. I think they're getting a stride back. And Wednesday, again, against Atletico at home. So they should be all right. So, again, I'm surprised they don't have the trophy just being all polished right now in Liverpool.
Well, I'm pretty sure the trophy is being polished and the hubcaps are being tuned and the parade route is being cleared of is being checked for guys wearing no shirts and but scarves, fat guys and no shirts but scarves. But
the Liverpool way.
There could be, yeah, the Liverpool way. This could work out to the benefit of the Premier League, though. If they feel the need, as soon as the title is, Liverpool's, they can essentially just shut the league down and say, all right, boys, that's it. We're going to play the FA Cup matches, or we're just going to stop the season there. And your place is where you are. Would that be something that you wouldn't be surprised by, Steph?
Currently, no, mainly because of what happened in Italy. I think it's particularly bad, though, that you know, of all the leagues that shut down first, it's Italy, because Italy hasn't had kind of like a title race in a number of years. And you're looking at, you know, Juventus is you know, of course, winning. But, you know, with Inter Milan being 9 points down, Lazio being only 1 point down, there is a chance to kind of create some sort of drama in the Italian league, and that's now basically going to be gone. And at least with the Premier League, that kind of like that drama isn't there when it has been quite frequently in the past few years. So it would be better for the Premier League if this was the case that happened all of Europe, is they can kind of go, look, we pretty much have a clear winner. So that's going to be the easy thing. I think you could see maybe some griping about the Europa League or Champions League spots. But overall, if any league had to do it outside of course, the French league, Ligue 1, because that league is also not very competitive, the Premier League just happens to be in a good position for that this year. I do think, though, overall, let's say that doesn't occur. I think this isn't good for the Premier League to have the fact that the Liverpool's out of the FA Cup and the Invincible streak is kind of over with. And so a lot of the drama that was left in English football that surrounded Liverpool is no longer there. You know, Man City already won the Man City Cup. And now basically you're seeing is what is Manchester United going to do at the end of the season? That's basically the only thing that's really worthwhile to watch because you see, City is, you know, the City's now just kind of like a team that's you know, plays well, but they're not they don't look like the world beaters that they have been over the past couple of years, past probably 5 years. So at least from there, that's basically all you have to watch now in the Premier League. So if it
no, I disagree.
And you shut it down. That's the way it appears to me right now.
No, wait, you got to think about Sheffield United coming from the Championship League last year and about to make into UEFA this year. They're having an amazing year. Like, they're so under the radar, but definitely got to give props to that team. And they're definitely still kind of the news story, I feel, in the Premier League right now after Liverpool and after the big boys. But you can't underestimate the huge power that Sheffield United is doing right now in the Premier League. You know, they're winning against Norwich, and I know Norwich is last place. But they're sitting pretty good right now. I'm kind of hoping you know, Arsenal will kind of pass them up, but Sheffield United is a wow kind of story right now.
Understood, but if Sheffield, they got to do it two seasons in a row. We've seen a number of teams that come and show strong for one season in the Premier League and then end up getting bounced 2 years later. So, you know, I mean, yes, I think the run is great for Sheffield, but let's see what happens next season before I start anointing them anything. I understand what you're saying, but I'm still not 100% sold. Because, you know, I mean Wolves has been well-established for quite a while. Not quite a while. That's mm-hmm. too strong. But I feel like Wolves has been a team that has a fair amount of success in the top flight in English football, whereas Sheffield really has not. So we'll see. Maybe you can have me eat my words next year if they're sitting in the same spot. Again, next year, I'll eat my words.
Can you name one person from Sheffield United?
Dean Henderson.
The goalkeeper that's on loan from Manchester United. I don't know his name. That's all I know about him.
Dean Henderson.
That's more than I do. That's why it's an incredible story. There's a bunch of no-namers that we barely even know who they are who are doing so well right now. So it's definitely a good story.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, Liverpool, beyond winning the league, they could have a say in who finishes in Europe and who finishes at the bottom of the table. Amongst the games in their run-in are Burnley and Villa, and Brighton, but they also have Arsenal and City and Chelsea left to come as well. Depending on how they handle those games, you know, this could have a huge impact on who gets into the Champions League, who gets into Europe, and mm-hmm. who goes down to League Two. If they put out a full-strength squad and Klopp goes and attacks, then, you know, that could have an impact on the table. We could be looking at trouble for some teams. Mm-hmm. If he puts out a weakened side and says, I'm going to play the kids for the rest of the season, Chelsea and Arsenal have the advantage of facing a weakened Liverpool side that mm-hmm. Manchester United didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take it.
Yeah, and this is not one of those academic exercises because we have seen it all too often. We know how coaches tend to react when they do mm-hmm. that. You can mm-hmm. write about it not necessarily being fair and wanting to they should field teams, but Klopp, we know, owes it to Liverpool, A, to make sure that he keeps his team healthy for as long as they continue to play in Europe, and B, no matter what goes on, he's got to get a look at what's in the pipeline for mm-hmm. he has some players or he doesn't, and there's no time to do that, like, after the title's been decided. So I'm not – that you know, I can complain about it at all I want, but it's not going to make a doggone bit of difference, and my team would have done the exact same thing had they been in a position
mm-hmm.
Where this was going to happen.
Agreed.
What do you got, Ted?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree completely. It'll be great for the teams that that if that was the situation, who can come in and say, like, hey, you know, we are in a position where we can see a week in Liverpool side and have a run and hopefully maybe try and stay up. And, you know, I'm sure the lower level teams would be hoping for that. But, you know, seeing how well those young kids are playing, I can't necessarily think that they're going to have, you know, if the kids are playing against, you know, Burnley and the Norwiches of the world, that they're going to have a much better chance of actually staying up. So, seeing the way they played in some of the cup games and stuff, and I doubt, you know, Klopp would want to put an entirely young squad out there. He's going to have some vets out there to try to just keep it, because it still is a Premier League game, and you still have lots of eyes on it as far as from television is concerned. And, you know, also I can't necessarily see him whirling over for, like, the Merseyside derby or something like that. I can see him going, like, yeah, I know it's the Merseyside derby, but still, we're going to play this game because we don't want y'all to win. It's still Everton. So, I can't say that I will be paying that much attention to what Liverpool chooses to do after they've won the title, and I'll probably be paying much more attention to, you know, the relegation battles, because you get some good games there at the end of the season, and kind of who takes spots, you know, 3, 4, and 5, because, you know, outside of the recent win Leicester's had, there really hasn't been much going on. I mean, Jamie Vardy scored 2 today, but he hadn't scored since, I believe, November. He's been really cold, so... So I think there's enough stories around to watch that hopefully it won't kind of dry up the season too quickly.
I feel like there's always stories to watch. We have, outside of Liverpool, one of the more competitive tables that we've had in the Premier League in a lot of time.
Agreed.
And there's a lot of movement still to be made. One of the things that we love about this format is the fact that outside of maybe 4 or 5 teams at the end of the season, everybody's playing for something, some way. And nothing is fully decided until the last few weeks of the season. You know, I think maybe it gets a little bit, it's kind of weird insofar as we have been waiting to see how long this unbeaten streak could last. And with each passing week, it got to be more and more like, well, they can't really do it, could they? And now that that's gone, the only thing that's really left is the win total and the points record. But Klopp may want to get the points record and the win total, the wins, the 30 wins and 103 points is what he needs. He could, but I could also see him saying, I really don't care, because you name me the two teams that have those records right now. I'm sure you know, but it's like, do we really look at them as being among the greatest Premier League teams ever? What do you think, Jay?
You know, I can see him kind of taking his foot off the gas just a little bit, just get some of the young blood kind of come in there, which then, you know, it might cost him a point here and there. He'll get his 30 wins. He's only a couple away from, he's at, what, 27 right now, 27, 28. So I'm not worried about that. The goals, he's got the point total, he's got about another 20, 21, 22. It's definitely doable, but as a coach myself, I want to get my young blood in there. I want to see, again, in my eyes, Liverpool had the trophy like a month ago. So I have no problem with him just kind of taking it, you know, to see what the future kind of holds a little bit. You know, yeah, they're not going to be unstoppable. It's impossible to have an unbeaten record, you know, but Watford just found a really good game against Liverpool, and Liverpool had their main guys on there, and Watford won 3-0. That's why this is the best league in the world. You never know who's going to beat who. So I can see kind of Klopp just saying, hey, you know, it's going to happen, whatever, but we have bigger aspirations in winning UEFA. You know, Man City is so far behind, Leicester is so far behind. They're in the rearview mirror, and they're just looking forward right now. So in my eyes, I think Klopp already has the season wrapped up in the Premier League. He's looking for the future. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with getting the young blood in there to see what you have. And some of them might be worth a couple $1 million that you can sell to get even better players. So this might be a good thing for the longevity of Liverpool for the next 2, 3, 4 seasons, where they might be producing these really fantastic teams because of the young blood kind of come up, and for him to see, for Klopp to see them in the Premier League, to see how they can go against some of these bigger clubs, especially at the end of the season. You know, I have absolutely nothing wrong with what Klopp's doing and his kind of mantra right now with kind of easing off a little bit, if that's what he's doing.
So they're the champions elect. Down the road, though, we should talk about the team that kind of helped them. It is awkward that it was Manchester United. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comes up with another win against the top 6 team. They have only Liverpool with 19 points has taken more than Manchester United's 17 against the quote-unquote Big 6 this year. was it as much that Manchester United won the game, or did pretty much Ederson manage to lose it for City by himself? Because to say that he had a bad game would be disrespectful to bad games everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a horror show. He definitely should have gotten down quicker to react to Martial's opener.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what he was doing for that with that throw-in that went right to McTominay, who then chipped him into the open net from about 40 yards out. And he almost missed a back pass that turned into another goal.
Mm-hmm.
So he was lucky it didn't even get worse. Give me your thoughts on the game, if you even watched it instead.
Yeah, I caught quite a bit of it. Even if Ederson had a great game, City still didn't score. And I think the best they could have hoped for with that performance, even if they had a fantastic performance from the goalie, was a draw. And you look at the shots, and Manchester United had way more shots on target. And while, you know, City had a lot of possession, City's possessing the ball but creating no chances doesn't really bode well for your ability to win. I don't know. Something looks wrong over there. I thought outside of Phil Foden, who looked really good. I just didn't see much of the fight from City that you're so used to seeing. I think this UEFA ruling has really got them shook up. I really do.
Yep.
And this, you're just not seeing that team that when they get the ball and turn around and attack. I mean, it's a thing of beauty to see for any soccer fan. You can hate City and watch their counter and watch the build up and watch De Bruyne on the ball and get excited. But, you know, Sterling just looks tired. Aguero looks like he's thinking about something else. You know, I just don't see it. That even the goal that Aguero scored, he was offside, but it was pretty evident he was offside. And I don't know. It just doesn't look right over there. And City and Manchester United, while I don't think they looked all that great, they had the energy, though. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing, too, James and Martial actually looked up and crossed the ball to Bruno Fernandes, this score could have been 4-0. So, I don't know. I tend to think that Manchester United probably won it a little more than City just lost it, but something's not right behind the curtain over there. And they can put their best foot forward all they can, but any lay fan who has any awareness of this financial fair play can see something's wrong.
Before we go on and talk about what's going on or what might be going on at City, give us your thoughts on the game, if you have any.
Yeah, I think the City lost it. You know, you kind of mentioned that real quick. You know, possession, Man City had 73% possession of the ball, and Man U had 27, and you still lose, you know, 2-0. Pass accuracy, 88% to 73%. Well, City had 761 passes to Man U's 294.
Yeah,
like,
they're
kicking
the ball around
the
middle of the field. That's all they're doing.
Yeah, and they don't move forward. Like, they don't have that killer instinct. So, on paper, they look like they should be dominating this game. But in reality, I think Man U wanted it even more. Yeah, it was at Old Trafford and everything. But, like, it just seemed like when Man U had the ball, it was attacking, it was fast, it was quick IQ, it was, you know, 1-2 touch. And I'm not saying that Man City never had your chance to score, but it just seemed like Man U just had a better game plan. And, it's, you know, I don't know if it's kind of set the bus back a little bit. When it was 0-0 and one time to go, let's go kind of concept. But whatever Ole had, his game plan worked out, you know, prestige. Again, how do you have 73% of the ball at your feet and you're not doing anything with it? You're not scoring goals. You know, your shots are so low on target, so low, you can't win games. So, like you said, a lot of them had, like, different, like, looks on their face. I saw, like, old man looks, like, oh, crap, here we go against a bunch of young boys that we can't keep up with. They're a step ahead of us. They look like just kind of ran down a little bit. So I don't know if, the UEFA and all the stress that's coming with it and just kind of, you know, getting up there in age a little bit, but they just look like they're a crap. You know, I think they just shot themselves in the foot. And definitely Man U's first goal was off the training ground. You can tell when the camera went to Ole, they showed him like, yep, I kind of worked. I'm surprised he kind of did. It's kind of like little smirk on his face, like, ha, I've got one.
But it just looked like they just caught him off at the wrong time. And when you're on the same page and everyone's ready to go and you're ready to score a goal, when there's blood in the water like that, and I think Man U sensed it at that time, and that's why they went quick as well. It was just a right decision on them at that time. So, again, Man City, I think they just lost it. Man U is ready to win the entire game.
This is the type of game that plays right into Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's vision for Man United, which is a counter-attacking team. He's not afraid to sit back and defend, but he wants them to counter at pace. And when you've got a team that's set up and likes to do that versus a team that likes to possess the ball and pass, as Pep does, they've got to move forward. When Man City moves forward, when they attack and they use the pace, the speed, and they're incisive, they create opportunities and they score. And I don't think that the defensive performance was that great that, you know, you would expect a clean sheet. Man United has been a little bit more effective opening up teams moving forward since Bruno Fernandes has been in. And we've seen the game plan sort of work better since they've had the additional creativity. But it's just interesting that kind of, to a certain extent, has Pep's number. And one of the knocks on Pep has always been there is no plan B for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his teams play a certain way. It was blatantly obvious if you've watched any scouting, any match, even if you're just a casual fan and you've watched a couple of Man United matches, what they were going to do. Yet, Pep said, all right, it's not that we need to have a plan B. It's not that we should give them the ball and let them possess it and then counterattack, as so many teams have done so effectively against Man United this year. It was just, we have to execute plan A better. I don't think we can say he's been found out. Like, not every team has the ability to do that, but this has certainly not exactly been a successful season from the beginning. Even before the ruling came out about financial fair play, City looked a little bit...
They started to look shaky. You're right about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know whether it's they can see the league title going and they're no longer concerned with the Premier League, whether it is the questions, you know, about Pep's role in that system. Is his message wearing thin? Is he not getting the same response from the players? Does he not know what to, how to get them to change up his methods? Are they really concerned about their future and they're looking for where they're going to go for their next club? I don't know, but clearly something is not right. And we said that this could have that sort of effect on them, this ruling. It could have that sort of effect, and you could see them not only drop out of Europe for next year, but just slide down the table in general as a result.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a City expert. I'm not the City whisperer. I don't know what's going on there. Is it an issue of, you know, Guardiola maybe has reached the end of his line there? Do they need a wholesale refresh to the squad? I don't know, but I do know I can ask you guys what you think about that.
Yeah.
So I'll start with you, G.
I think the lineup, first of all, could, you know, kind of maybe went against City. You know, once Mahrez went in there, it seemed like on the right side, the energy picked up a lot. Like, he was ready to go kind of thing. You know, I'm just looking at the stats or the bench players right now. Kyle Walker didn't play whatsoever. Kevin De Bruyne, who's a huge, which I always think from year in and year out, he should be the number one player of the year. I think he's phenomenal IQ. He's a very great player. He's not even on the bench. So, like, you're missing some two big or three big players that really can change the game for a City. So I don't know why, you know, they left him on the bench and brought him in late with Mahrez. Walker, you have the experience. You have the speed. You have the IQ. Don't know why he didn't bring them in. So I don't know. Maybe it's not their year. Things aren't lining up. But there's just maybe some uncertainties of the player, the personnel.
who's healthy, who has what going on, and all everything else. So maybe it's just that the soccer gods, that it's Liverpool's year, and Man City, you're going to struggle the entire year, and good luck trying to figure it out. So don't know. So is this, again, is this the last year where Pep says, hey, I'm out after these 2 years, I'm kind of banning in UEFA? Or, you know, is he going to, you know, kind of write up his contract for another year? So something's going on with Man City. I'm not an expert. The only expert that I'm at is sleeping sometimes. And not even as an Arsenal Gooner fan, I have no idea what the heck's going on with them either. So one thing is always certain, I'm always tired at midnight and I go to bed.
Go for it, Stead.
Yeah, I think what you were talking about with Pep not really wanted to change his tactics. I can recall a press conference where he was pretty adamant how he was not going to change his tactics. You know, I've won 21 titles. You know, I'm not changing anything like that. But, yeah, this is also a time when after, you know, after this doesn't work so much anymore in this particular area, he could be, you know, he could cash in his chips and say thank you very much and I'm out. So, I did start to see cracks in the armor earlier in the year, well before the financial fair play ruling came out. But I still think that that ruling probably added maybe more cracks to the armor than were there before. But overall, it was it's to say that there's not something going on, or you know, you think about a way where a coach can go in and kind of wear out their welcome after a while. Could it be a situation like that? I don't know. And I think for me, it'll be difficult to determine, because even though fair play came after you started to see City with some real holes in the game, the fact that it's still relatively close, who knows what wind of it that they had prior. Maybe you could see some of the people who were the higher ups in City saying, look, Pep, no, we're not buying anybody this year. We got something in the works that might not be too positive for us in the future. So again, I'm also not a City expert. I'm not going to act like I really, really, really closely follow the team. But I've noticed that my friend Mike, since we've been doing this show, a couple of times we've speculated on things. Some of our speculations have become truth. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, again, this is one of his worst seasons, and if not the worst. He'll come out with the Man City Cup. They are still alive in Europe. They are still alive in the FA Cup. As far as the league goes, it is a high for losses for Manchester City under Pep Guardiola. And this derby was just the latest in some evidence of feeling like he's maybe been found out a little bit. Or that the squad just didn't have the ability to overcome a tactic that could hurt them. They just, rather than overcome, they succumb. Meanwhile, in other news, Chelsea stay fourth, and Arsenal pick up a win yesterday as well. Here's your chance, gentlemen, to gloat about your Gooners if you so choose to do it. Starting with you.
Three in a row, baby. Three wins in a row, man. So things are good for Arsenal, it seems like, right now. So I can't complain. It's always, you know, and the text message strain, it's always good to see our rivals, Tottenham, sliding down. Now they're only a point ahead of us, and we have a game, you know, still to play, even though it's against Man City. But, like, Arsenal's kind of in the thick of things right now. We got 40 points, and, you know, we win one game, we have 43, and we're tied with the Wolves and Sheffield United for 6 and 7. So we're knocking on the door right now, and especially with Man City and what's going on with them and UEFA, there's an open spot kind of waiting for us, it seems like. So it's good to be a Gooner fan right now. So I'm kind of happy.
I'm not quite there yet. I can say, though, that it is nice to see that they've won three in a row, which they haven't done since, I believe, August in the Premier League. And, yeah, Spurs are struggling. They just got hit with another injury. For a player that's going to be out for the season. So, you know, the slide is going to get pretty strong there. And we all know how Jose Mourinho does when things start getting bad at home. But, you know, Arsenal's also got a game in hand, which is nice. As far as, you know, I'm not going to say I'm excited because, you know, it's against the game. It's home against West Ham. and West Ham can't get out of their own way, and they haven't been able to for a decade. So I'm a bit tempered in my enthusiasm, but I do think Arsenal is knocking on the door with an opportunity to actually maybe get get at the table a little bit. I also just kind of want to throw out, Chelsea having a big win, 4-0 against Everton at home, and then Leicester also going up 4-0. So that kind of like put a little bit of a stamp for Chelsea and Leicester to say, hey, I know that we've had some slides lately, but we are firmly, we believe we are firmly remaining in the top four. So we'll see what comes of that. And, I want to throw some props to Brendan Rodgers. I mean, good on you to not start Vardy, put him on the bench, and then sub him in, and then he scores a brace. So clearly that particular that decision that he made proved to be very, very, very wise, especially because Vardy had gone completely cold in the goal-scoring realm.
You know, Mike is allowing us to really talk about Arsenal right now, and you're talking about Leicester, you're talking about other teams. So just throwing that out there as an observation that you're wishing good, solid Gunnar time right now.
I'm not putting the cart in front of the horse yet, G. That's all you, brother.
But to see where we're going from where we started from, it's such a huge turnaround. And Arteta, with him and his and the new style, everything. So that's why I'm looking positive, because
yeah.
I was the biggest, I can't stand them, this kind of fan this year and stuff like that. But just to see the turnaround and where we are right now, it's a great thing to see. Especially in the middle of the season, or toward the end of the middle of the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can they hang on to Aubameyang after this season? Do they even need to? Or are you comfortable with the likes of Martinelli carrying the load up front?
Do you want to take that first, or you want me to take it?
I'll see with me. I would love to keep him. If we can throw him some extra money, whatever to do to make him happy. I think what they have right now and the young squad they have right now, again, I'm going to throw Arteta out there, but just everything, it seems like it's slowly coming together right now. It'd be awesome to keep his skill as a goal scorer, but, who's to say, if more money speaks, maybe I wouldn't be a teacher forever, but, sometimes you got to follow where the money is, so. I would love to keep him, but if he decides to go with the money debt, I can't blame him. But, man, we've got a good thing going on right now in Arsenal.
Yeah, I personally think that if you can pay him and he wants to stay, then, of course, you keep him. I'm sure he's going to want £350,000 to £400,000 a week, because he has to make more than Ozil does. He has to, or else he won't be happy with that. But if it comes to a point where they have to sell him, I'm not necessarily totally angry with that either. I think we saw him sell Lacazette as well. But Pepe's looked good. He's not scoring, but, man, that kid looks good. And, you got to say, I like Saka. I like the young boy. He's doing all right. Nketiah's looking pretty good. Joe Willock's looking pretty good. Reece Nelson's looking pretty good. There's some young players on this squad outside of Martinelli that have the attacking chops. Arteta is able to kind of mold this young crop of attacking players into something that is that works really, really well together and gets some real cohesion. This team can be very, very, very exciting going forward. So if I had to pick between keeping Aubameyang or actually getting two strong central defenders, I might have to go over Aubameyang. I might have to.
Being a goalie, defense always wins championships. So I have to agree with that 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Even though you're giving away a huge asset, I agree. If we get our defense solid first and pick up mid-level forward, good luck, kid. Go out there and score some goals for us. Kind of, smack him on the butt as he goes out there. But I agree, man. Get some defense now. It's what we need.
You saw what Bert Leno had to do this weekend. I mean,
he's MVP.
Three of them
the
are miraculous saves. I mean, come on. What would they do without that goalkeeper? Can you get him some protection, please?
Well, yeah, he's definitely my MVP of the entire year. He stayed in so many games.
Yeah, and Aubameyang can be second or third or even first in goals scored for the Premier League. It's not even close.
Right. Leno's the man.
So the run through March into April, relatively favorable for Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm sure you guys know, after the game Wednesday against Man City, Brighton, Southampton, the FA Cup quarter against Sheffield United, Norwich, before you play Wolves. But the run-in is tough. Is this the point in the season where they need to pick up all the points that they possibly can? Because, yes, we talked about it, but ending your season with the likes, with a run that's Wolves, Leicester, Tottenham, Liverpool, it's a tough run of four games. And I know that you guys put together the three-game win streak, but it's easy to see the wheels falling off again.
Of course.
Is this one of those where they have to win everything until the 4th of April?
Yes, absolutely. I think that they have to win this Manchester City game. They're down. City's struggling a little bit. Stomp on their throat. You can go into East Lynn's and win. You can do that. They have to win this game or at least get a draw. If they go in there and they lose 3 or 4 nothing, then the season's going to start to unravel from there. That worries me the most. This game is extraordinarily pivotal because they need to get those points. You have to get a point at least from Manchester City because, yes, you have Brighton and you have Southampton, even though Southampton has the fourth or fifth best goal scorer in the league right now. And with the way Arsenal's defense is playing, he could easily put in two. So, yes, I think they have to. They have to get all the points they can. I think they need to get at least 10 points out of the next four games. And then going into Wolves, because you don't want to go into Molineux on the road on a skid. You don't want to do that. And so, I agree, Mike. I think they need to get at least 10 points to make this season actually be something they can be proud of and get to a spot where they can compete for Europe.
10 points in the next up, a run where they got 10 out of 10 points from four games would certainly put them back into the conversation, which is a far cry from where you thought it was going to be before Arteta, before January. So they're picking up elsewhere in the table. Pretty much status quo. Tottenham, the big droppers this weekend, but we've already talked about that. Sheffield United hanging on to 7th. And at the bottom of the table, it is North, Aston Villa, and Bournemouth. Remember when we really, really liked Eddie Howe?
Yeah, I do. Remember when I wanted Eddie Howe at Arsenal? Like I said that last year.
And it's hard to say whether this is a case of they just don't have the players or they're not getting the most out of them, because you would think with the likes of Harry Wilson, Callum Wilson, I know Aki's been hurt for quite a bit of time, but this is not a team that I expected to be in a relegation scrap. Now, they are goal difference away from getting out of it. Are they going to be the team? But relegation fights are weird. They can be really weird. You always see a team get sucked down or a team that can make the great escape. Where do you think this falls for Bournemouth, who have an iffy run in? Their running is far, far, far from straightforward. As they have to deal with Wolves on the road, United on the road, Tottenham at home, Leicester at home, and City on the road before facing Southampton and Everton to win end the season. You could see them, it's conceivable they may not win another game. Where do you fall on them, Stead?
I'm a bit scared for the Cherries. I am. I don't think that Eddie Howe has gotten what he can out of his players. That squad is relatively talented, and they have made moves in the transfer market to not only stay up but to remain competitive for some good mid-table positions. So I'm not sold. I could see them getting out of it. I could see them, having a little bit of success against some of the games they have at home coming up. I could see them getting, you know, Crystal Palace can beat anybody, but Crystal Palace can also lose to anybody, and they can lose bad to anybody. We've seen that. Crystal Palace will beat Manchester City and then lose to Norwich City in a week's time. So, you know, I'm a bit concerned there, but there's something about this Bournemouth squad where I just can't see them getting wins. I can't see them going into Molineux and getting a win on the road. I can't. Newcastle's been winning games recently or look relatively competitive recently. I don't know. I'm worried about them. I could see them finishing 17th, or excuse me, 17th and just barely staying up, or I could see them, you know, because of goal differential, finishing 18th. They haven't been able to put the ball in the net effectively, and when they have, they can't hold on the leads. So, you know, I'm a bit concerned. I am. And Mike, you know, that's a team that I've kind of like been a cheerleader since they've come up into the Premier League. I've been really happy to see them have some success, finishing ninth even a couple of years ago. But I don't know. I think the win may come out of the sails for Bournemouth, and they may see themselves in the Championship next year.
Gee, are they going to make the Great Escape, or are they looking at a season in the Championship?
Yeah, they'll be relegated. They have the toughest schedule out of all the 27 point teams. Watford, I would say, is the second easiest of all of them, but I think West Ham will stay up. I think Watford will stay up, so 16th and 17th. I think Bournemouth, it was fun getting to know you the last couple seasons. Hopefully you'll do better in the Championship League. They're just really tough. Bournemouth's schedule the rest of the year is really tough. Yeah, Crystal Palace is kind of hot right now. They've won three straight, so that's what they go against. But Bournemouth is pretty good at home. I imagine that they have Wolves. That's not going to happen. Man U, not going to happen. Tottenham, not going to happen. Leicester, Man City, Everton. Those are all losses. The only chance they really have is Crystal Palace, Newcastle, and Southampton. And Newcastle's been kind of hotter lately. Crystal Palace has been hotter. So I really don't see them doing anything. If anything, I think maybe the Villa might pass them up, maybe get 17th or 16th. But I think they're doomed this year. I think them and Norwich City definitely my two locks. I'll say it, my two locks to be relegated. The last one, I'll flip a coin a little later. But, yeah, Bournemouth does not look good the rest of the season. Kind of hoping West Ham will kind of stay up this year just because they've always been around. They haven't been really close, even clear last several seasons. Always seems like they've been fighting for their lives to stay up top. And here we are again, another season where, you know, West Ham is fighting for their life again. So nothing's really easy for them, but I think they will stay up top. So I think Bournemouth and Norwich is definitely my two locks. So West Ham, Watford will stay up. It just matters who takes the last 18th place.
West Ham is one of those teams that I've never quite figured out because they have such a rabid fan base.
Mm-hmm.
I know the new stadium hasn't exactly worked out the way that they want it to.
Yeah,
but it's just you feel like they should be such a better team than they are. I've never not understood why they struggled so much. Before we move on, I want to give a big shout out to the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment, and the best place in the world to watch what will be some interesting games this midweek and on the weekend, especially as we have the Old Firm Derby between Celtic and Rangers on Sunday. That's where Celtic can all but deliver the knockout blow that sees them win the Scottish Premier League for the 9,365th year in a row. In Spain this weekend, Real Betis knock off Real Madrid 2-1. A week after we're basically handing the La Liga title to Real Madrid after their win in El Clasico, they go out and go on the road and pretty much get right back to Barcelona. Couldn't Barcelona mess around and actually see this out?
Yeah. I actually watched some of this game when I tuned into the highlights after the stats were going on and everything like that. And like Real Betis looked they looked good. I mean, the possession wasn't skewed like you would expect in a Real Madrid game. I mean, Betis had 42% possession. They had either equal shots on goal, more shots on target, but they just seemed to have a bit more fight in them. And, you know, yeah, I mean, Real Madrid scored on a PK. So I don't know, man. And that was also a very, 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 like, late in the half PK. But, you know, what you got to do against teams like Madrid is capitalize on the mistakes that they make. And Betis was able to do that. And because, you know, when you're not, when you don't have the talent, you don't have the budget, you don't have the defense that they have, when they drop something in front of you, you got to take it and go with it. And they did. But just kind of watching the game, I mean, Real Betis, they looked like a relatively, I don't want to say dominant squad for La Liga, but they looked pretty good. You know, they looked like a team that could actually, you know, compete at a higher level than they are. I mean, I'm not going to say they played well in La Liga. I mean, they're sitting there in 12th place, but at least overall, that particular game, they's like, we're playing against some of the big boys. We got to step up, and they got a target on their back. You hear that phrase all the time. You know, they always seem to, you know, you play up to your competition, but they did, and they won the game. But they won the game, like, they didn't win it fluky. You know what I mean? I thought they just flat out beat them. So good on them. And Real Madrid, you know, it's too bad that you guys have now dropped two of your last three in the league, and you've only got 7 points out of the last 15 that were available. So Real, I mean, they may hand this right back to Barcelona, which is sad.
Well, it allows Barcelona to maintain a two-point lead in or to regain a two-point lead that they had coughed up.
Yeah, just do what Madrid does. And you're good.
Yeah, they just matched Madrid's results throughout the rest of the season. They will be crowned champions. Clowned champions sounds about right, too, because this is not a team that you would have expected after this season to be sitting where they are. Jig.
Yeah, I don't think any team is scared of Barcelona or Real Madrid anymore the last couple of seasons.
Yeah,
I see them going after them. And I actually was watching the Real Betis game. And their first goal they scored, one of the Real Betis forwards got hacked in the box. Everyone stopped. The ref didn't blow the whistle. And I believe it was the Real Betis' right defender blasted the crap out of the ball. And Courtois, you looked at him and you see his body language. He thought it was a foul, so he went from 0 to, tried to 100 in a matter of a second when the ref didn't blow the whistle. So they even just shut down for that millisecond, which allowed Real Betis to score that goal. And I think from there, it was just go, go, go. Real Betis just had a better game plan. It just seemed like they were attacking, and again, didn't seem like they were scared of Real Madrid by any means. So I think right now, and we've been talking about all year so far, that these two teams, number one, number two, Barcelona, Real Madrid, aren't the normal team that we've seen in the past. So maybe some of these younger teams say, hey, we have nothing to lose. We're in 15th place. We're in 20th place. Let's go after these big boys and let's see what happens. And, you know, sure enough, they get a tie here and there. They get a win here and there. But Real Betis just looked like it was a better team, a better game plan, better just drive in that game. So, I think Real Madrid is just lacking in some of their offensive performance without having Hazard. A lot of their players seem like they're getting a little older, not that much, but teams like that, you always seem like they should replenish some of the old guys with the young guys. And definitely you would see it with Barcelona. They're not really doing that. So anytime I feel like a younger team has this energy in this, I don't care who this team is, you know, historically we're going to go after them, I see a lot more fight in that. I see better games like that. And sometimes Real Madrid and Barcelona gets, you know, bit by the snake a little bit. So I think that's what kind of happened over the weekend. So it was a good 2-1 victory over Real Madrid. But Real Betis, again, middle of the road table, they just worked harder than Madrid did.
We have our first confirmed relegation from one of the top leagues. Toulouse is out of league. Mind you, they had only picked up 13 points the entire season. So we will bid a fond farewell to them, their relegation being confirmed. I don't know. There's an interesting article, if you guys should want to read it, on The Guardian, that's talking about, like, yeah, it's really bad. They've had a farcical season, and it's probably going to get worse. So if you are a fan of that team, why are you listening to the show? Because you probably know more about football than we do, if you're a fan of Toulouse. let's be honest. If you're rooting for Toulouse, then you probably know more about the sport than we do.
Mm-hmm.
This week I want to make sure I get this in. Was the She Believes Cup, the invitational tournament down in Florida. The U.S. picked up wins against England on the 5th and Spain over the weekend. They will play Japan in their last match coming up, I think, tomorrow, right, G?
Yes, sir. I think he's in New Jersey.
Okay. You are our...
It's on Wednesday.
Okay, Wednesday night in Jersey. You are a women's soccer expert. What did you think of how the U.S. women played in this tournament as they get ready to go to the Olympics against two teams that they could see... I don't think they'll see Spain, but I know they could see England in the Olympics. What did you think, Jay?
Because we always make fun of them. Like, you know, do they have any kind of competition? They're blowing teams out 7-0, 8-0, 15-0. But these are all teams that are Latin American, South American, or Asian. And, again, you know, you guys are huge MLS fans. I'm not. I see it as a, you know, junior high kind of, you know, league. All the true competitions over in Europe. All the great teams are in Europe. All the great club teams are in Europe. So for United States to beat England 2-0 and an upcoming team, Spain, is looking really, really good, 1-0. One thing I like about the United States is right now when we have ladies who are sitting out because they're having babies or their injuries, the subs or the B-teamers, I hate to call them that, they come in and they fill the positions just as much as the normal starters. Press is coming off the last two games with 2 goals. She, you know, she's putting up some fantastic shots, putting in some 25-yarders, and she's screaming them. She's playing very well. She's playing very smart. Williams on the right side is faster than all heck for America, that she was blown by the left side of Spain. There's a lot of potential coming through the American national team. And it's good to see that when they do sub out, their performance, who are coming on the field, on the pitch, that the performance does not drop. You can't say that with a lot of teams, especially professional teams, especially with women professional teams, where it seems like any kind of sub that comes off the bench, the performance just drops to a little bit. The United States is not like that. So in this tournament, we should win it, not a problem. In the World Cup, we should go into the championship game. Then from there, God only knows, because France is an outstanding team this year, and they have been for the last 2 years. Great Britain can maybe beat the United States on the United States' horrible day, but besides that, I think that truly the only competition is France. So it would be good to see them, United States, right now. We have Japan coming up on Wednesday. Then in April, we have against Australia. That should not be a problem. Then 4 days later, we go against Brazil. And Brazil will be a fantastic warm-up right before the World Cup this summer. So Brazil is another good team that would give United States a huge fight that United States should win 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, something like that. But United States is hitting, you know, all their strides right now with, you know, a newer coach, some newer players. It's definitely good to watch them and see the progress they've been doing over the years and the new blood that's coming in. So we are still champions. I think we'll be champions again for a long while right now. Competition throughout the world is coming up higher. But, again, the only truly people that I have a fear of is France. France looks solid.
England that has really scuffled since the Women's World Cup. They've only had 3 wins since then, losing to drawing with Belgium, losing to Norway and Brazil and Germany before beating Japan. They've had wins against the Czech Republic and Portugal over that time. I don't know what to say about that. You would think, you thought that it could be something, the start of something, when they made it into the semifinals of the Women's World Cup before losing to England. It certainly doesn't look like the Neville's team is trending in the right direction heading into the Women's Olympic tournament, which they will compete in. What do you think, Stud?
Yeah, you know, we got to cut England a little bit of slack here, though, I think, because I'm not sure in the early days of international women's soccer, like, you know, in the latter parts of the 20th century, that they were very invested in their women's soccer program. I mean, England has competed in, I'd say Great Britain, you could say, because their track and field history is very, very deep for the men and the women. But I don't know. I just get the feeling that their investment in their women's national team and women's soccer in general is relatively new. And so when that's the situation, you're going to hit a lot of bumps in the road along the way. I suspect that because the coaching that is there is, of course, going to be superior in the grand scheme of coaches' training than it would be in the United States, England should be able to bounce back. But I think they're still working on a lot of their best women athletes looking at soccer as their sport. I still think that their best female athletes are not necessarily looking at soccer as their number one sport to pursue. So we'll see what happens. I think you got to give England another decade or so. Whereas, you know, the likes of France and Germany were, and Norway and Sweden were actually like pumping a lot of their resources into their women's national team programs. So, you know, England should be good. It's always better for the soccering world if England is good. So we'll see what happens with them, but I think you got to give them a little bit more time.
MLS, they played this weekend. I'm not sure what went on out in LA. Poor Philadelphia Union. First, you have to go to Dallas to open the season, and then you get a trip to LA to play LAFC. Somehow they managed to run out of that game 3-3 draw. The DC Union picked up their first win of the season, which means that Inter Miami did not. Your thoughts on anything you saw or didn't see this weekend in domestic soccer, Stead?
Well, I'll tell you this. Inter Miami looks better than DC United. They do. They looked better. They seem to have more, a bit more flair. I mean, it's obvious that they're definitely playing with some of that Miami vibe. But they were dominating in the game before the red card happened, and they were, you know, it's funny, I've had the toughest time trying to see what actually happened with Roman Torres and picking up that red card. But, you know, DC clearly benefited from that because they scored both of their goals right after the red card occurred. So they were able to kind of, like, answer quickly before Miami was able to kind of settle in. DC's not very good. They're just not. And I think that this game is a relative fluke. I was not really impressed. So we'll see what happens moving forward. Again, as we said so many times, you can't make anything solid to say about MLS till about June. So we'll see what happens then. But I mean, another thing I just noticed this weekend was that Atlanta United is still proving to be head and shoulders above the rest in the Eastern Conference, even with the injury to Joseph Martinez. So that's the way it looks right now. Also, you know, let me just tell you about your boys, Philly, Mike. It's a shame the game had to go down the way they did because they were up three times, and every single time L.A. was able to score relatively quickly after they had to give up one. So it's too bad. Your boys have had a rough start to the season, but they're proving they can get the ball in the net, and that's always a positive thing.
Well, the problem was the first game of the season, they couldn't get the ball in the net. This game, they couldn't keep the ball out of the net.
Out of the net, yeah.
Starting with back-to-back road games in the MLS is hard. Starting with back-to-back road games against two teams you presume will be in the playoff picture and probably the higher echelons of it is even harder, especially when one of those teams, let's be honest, was a team that we all presumed would win MLS Cup last year.
Absolutely.
It doesn't look like they've gotten weaker.
right,
over the intervening season.
Yeah. And don't forget, Philly also, it wasn't like they had road games in New York and D.C. They had road games in Dallas and L.A. So that weighs on you, too.
And the only good thing that can be said is that you got those two trips out of the way early in the season.
Mm-hmm. True.
And that's one thing that you don't have to worry about. Perhaps they saw, like, hey, we can be competitive with a team like LAFC, which taking that next step.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the problems that I have with MLS is there is a clear delineation between the top teams in the league and the bottom in the next tier of teams, and then you have your teams at the bottom. For Philadelphia, it seems like getting into the playoffs is about where they hope to be.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the resources that Atlanta United has, and it's all about putting together something, and the margins are so thin. If one part doesn't work, the whole thing collapses in a manner in which you don't see in other leagues. Right now, I would have to say the likes of LAFC, Atlanta United are the class of the league. Oddly enough, though, it's NYCFC that finds themselves all the way back down at the bottom of the table right now. But again, just like we said last year when they got off to a relatively slow start, don't expect it to stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the real fun in the MLS doesn't start until the weather gets warm. Many teams that... It's the weirdest thing. New England Revolution last year were left for dead at the beginning of the season before Bruce Arena took over, and they ended up making a pretty good run towards the playoffs at the end of the year. So this DC United, before Wayne Rooney came, before Wayne Rooney came, they were one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, they were.
After they were a playoff team and have one of the best home records in the league. So
and hosted a game.
And hosted a game. So they went all the way from rock bottom of the league to high enough to host a playoff game. There's still a lot to come with that. All right, as we round out today's show, what are you guys looking for in the week that comes? Start with you, Coach G.
Obviously, I'm always looking forward to an Arsenal game. So, and I get two this week. I get one on Wednesday, I get one on Saturday. I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen with Tottenham over the last couple of days now. The next couple of days, especially with their UEFA final or game coming up and stuff like that. Again, it's always good to see the bad guys sliding down and not doing as well as the Gooners. Interested to see the Rangers and Celtic game, number one versus number two in the Scottish League. Besides that, I always enjoy watching soccer, so it's always good to talk about it. So if I come back next week, it'll be fantastic, gentlemen.
All right, Stead, what do you got?
I was actually – you know, G, you kind of took what I was going to say, which is great, because I was actually really interested in the Man United-Tottenham game. I really am curious to see how Tottenham responds to this bit of adversity that they're going through, and also to have Manchester United go and visit the Spurs stadium, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer against Jose Mourinho. And so that's the one that definitely going to be tuning in on Sunday. But also, if we can get to next Monday, we got the Merseyside derby, which it should be a relatively easy win for. I mean, it should be based on standings and everything like that. Should be an easy win for Liverpool. But Everton has played well. If you can get rid of the Chelsea game, they've done well under Ancelotti, and Liverpool has not looked good, even in the win they had against Bournemouth. They didn't look all that great. And, Everton can win this game. They can. So, I would not be shocked if they win it 2-3. So, there seems to be some wind coming out of the sails of Liverpool. So, we'll see what happens there. Of course, last time I said this, I ate my words, and I think a team that I was rooting against, or not rooting against, but felt it wasn't going to win 1-4. But we'll see. I'm just saying, you can't say that Liverpool has been that that squad. They've gotten a lot of very, very close, very late wins when they have not looked dominant because you get a moment of magic from Sadio Mane. And we'll see if that happens again. But I think if any time Everton can get a win in this particular matchup, which they've been unsuccessful at for quite a while, now is the time.
Tottenham go into the week without a win since mid-February, since Valentine's Day weekend. And that win came against Aston Villa. The problems are clear. They're having trouble getting the ball into the back of the net without the likes of Harry Kane, Son. Now Stephen Bergwijn goes out for presumably the year. It's a little bit light up front. They're going to Leipzig to play against a team that in the Champions League that won 1-0, but I never really particularly felt like Tottenham was in that game, even though it was only 1-0. It was that, and we know Jose's tendencies. We'll make it 3-for-3 on wanting to see Man United and Tottenham on Sunday. I will definitely be sitting down to watch that someplace. As always, always interested to see the Old Firm, which will also be on Sunday. As for this week, Champions League, Atletico Madrid travel to Anfield with a one-goal lead. You said it. They didn't. Liverpool has been a little bit shaky. I don't know whether it's been because they've had one eye on this game after getting beat at the Wanda Metropolitano. It'll be interesting. I think that Liverpool will pull this off, but would you at all be surprised if another great defensive effort gave Atletico Madrid the edge? I was talking to British Will. I said the longer that this stays 1-0, the longer that Liverpool need to go to score, I think the pressure gets on them. You know, they are fantastic at Anfield, especially on these European nights. But I think you could see some nerves around Anfield if it goes into the second half and Atletico have an advantage of any kind, be it one goal or two goals. What do you think, Stitt?
Yeah, I really, really agree. I mean, that's you know, we're kind of talking about sort of the same thing with Liverpool having this internal pressure because it's like we already won the Premier League, but you know, we still have to make sure if they win against Everton, they have a shot to win it at home and not win it on the road at Manchester City. Of course, you're going to want to win that at home, and then the very frustrating game they played against Atletico in the first round. So, yeah, this is a pivotal week for Liverpool in the sense that they could, you know, you lose this game to Atletico or you know, let's say you get a 1-1 draw at home, which would be awful because then, of course, you're going to, or even a 2-1 win at home, then, you know, that gives them a road goal and then you're out. So that would be that, you know, Liverpool's definitely got to be feeling it. It was nice to see the old Klopp back again, because after the previous week when he was basically sitting on the bench, not doing anything, to see him up, you know, pumping his arms and, you know, giving his players piggyback rides and stuff. That's the Klopp you want to see. And that's the Klopp that his players need. So hopefully he can kind of like keep that guy there, because maybe he can will them to a win. Cause I don't see Atletico doing anything differently. I mean, they're going to be hard-nosed defense. They're going to lean on their strikers as much as possible, or their forwards as much as possible, to keep them out as much as possible. So, you know, and on top of that, too, I mean, we'd be remiss if we don't talk about the Man City-Real Madrid game, with Man City being up 2-1. So this could also be a really, really big game. And, you know, Man City could be putting everything into this, which is why they look so bad over the weekend against Manchester United.
They're going to need to come up with a performance, because they need to keep going in the Champions League, and Pep never likes to lose to Real Madrid. Can Zidane get one over on him and overturn that? I don't necessarily see. I just don't. It's hard sometimes to understand where Real Madrid is going to get their goals from. And I don't for them. I think going into the Etihad might be a little bit too much. But anyway, before we leave, I want to say a big thank you to our sponsor, as always, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. And say a big thank you to producer Paul once again for setting us up and keeping us on time. Due to some external obligations, we'll be taking a brief hiatus this next week, but we'll be looking forward to rejoining you just as soon as possible. All right, as we get ready to depart this podcast coil and end the epic ridiculousness for the evening, parting shots, Coach G.
Thanks very much for having me on, guys. I always appreciate it like normal. I hope you guys have a great week, and go Gunners.
All right. Coach, Mr. Stead,
as we leave. I think one thing to pay attention to, I'm sure we'll talk more about this next week. We won't be having next week. Something to look forward to. What happens with the Juve-Lyon Champions League game that occurs next Tuesday on March 17th, since that game is supposed to be at the Old Lady. So that's kind of like a little thing to keep in your back pocket, because I'm sure we will be we will have a lot to say in the weeks after that. You know, you already have like a couple of areas saying, nope, you guys can't play here, you can't play here. So we'll see what the UEFA does with that game, but that's going to be interesting.
It's really going to be interesting because we've talked about it, whether they would move them behind closed doors, how they're going to handle it. Both leagues, oddly enough, have made moves to either limit or suspend athletic competitions, limit fan access, or suspend them entirely. It's going to be interesting to see what UEFA does and how they handle it.
Because they tried to play the same in Malta, and Malta said no thank you.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting one because certainly you have to feel for Juventus. Like, they worked hard to get that advantage of playing the home leg. Basically, now they're being forced for circumstances outside of their control to get it. Now, does UEFA come down hard on them and say, like, okay, because you can't host this game in a certain amount of time period, in a certain time period, you are hereby eliminated and advancedly owned? Or do they act with some measure of understanding? I will say this, it'll be interesting because we all know that UEFA is not exactly the most consistent with their reactions to something. I can see them getting mad at Lyon and Juventus for not being able to play and somehow docking Arsenal points. But another great week, gentlemen, as we go out. I want to thank you guys for your participation. We did all right this week. We'll try and do well next week. Once again, for Coach G, Stead, and producer Paul, I'm Mike, and this has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. Thanks. Have a great evening.